My name is Lawrence Taylor. I'm pastor of Kenilworth Baptist Church, and this is another episode on Reflection on Scripture. Thank you for joining with us, and I'd like to share some thoughts that I had about the issue of political correctness. Now, there's a lot that's been said, especially on the side of conservatives, on their attack on political correctness. Now, what these conservatives actually mean by political correctness, and when I say conservatives, I should also include certain neoliberals too. What they mean by that is that, look, we got it. We don't need to go out of our way to be offensive, but why should we have to filter everything we say? This is actually, they argue, a prevention of free speech. So it's wrong to say certain things. Like, let's take Megyn Kelly, the failed TV hostess who argued that Jesus is white. That's what she said on national TV. Jesus is white. And a lot of people jumped on her about that because that was something they said was not politically correct. Well, I don't know about political correct, but it is certainly historically inaccurate. But what these conservatives actually want when they carry out this war against political correctness is to say, we can say anything we want to about anybody we want to, about any group, and the moment you protest, they will charge you with, well, you're just being politically correct. So we've witnessed this a number of times. But if you're so concerned about the right of freedom of speech, why are the same people advocating censorship when it comes to books? There are certain books that they don't want you to read anymore. Beloved by Toni Morrison, for instance. They actually have gone so far as to say that we don't even want you to talk about slavery in the way that you've been talking about it in the public schools because it makes white people feel bad. And if anything makes white people feel bad, then you should not be doing it. A classical example of that would be the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, where they have tried to purge the curriculum in the public schools to do away with this, do away with disciplines like teaching Black history, teaching Holocaust studies, and that sort of thing. So it looks like these people who cried out about political correctness wanted both ways. They want to have the freedom to say any derogatory thing that they possibly can about groups that they don't like, Blacks, Latinos, women. But at the same time that they do this, they also want censorship too over certain literature and certain subjects. We don't want you to teach those subjects anymore. So it seems that this duplicity, this hypocrisy is just so blatant. But let us know that when one teaches history, you're not teaching it to avoid arousing certain sensibilities. Of course, people are going to have visceral responses when you teach certain subjects, but history is history. I had a woman tell me not too long ago when I say certain things, it sounds like I'm always saying something negative about the United States. And she said, give it a break already. I mean, that was her expression. Give it a break already, all right? And I said, oh, what's really bothering you? And she said, okay, I'll tell you. I'll tell you what's bothering me. You always talk about black. Okay, there, I said it. Now, needless to say, this was a white woman, a pretty wealthy white woman, privileged white woman, who says some pretty derogatory things about black people, such as, I want to quote her correctly, she didn't know I was listening, so she said, she looked like the typical black woman, you know, the Aunt Jemima type. But she didn't consider that a racist. So if you correct her about it, then she'll say, well, all you do is talk about race. Well, no, not really. We live in the United States. It is the most race-conscious society on the planet. There was only one society that was probably as race-conscious as the United States, and that was the apartheid South Africa. But let's remember, apartheid did not begin in South Africa. It began in the United States. So, yeah, you know, but the point is that you can always speak the truth. When you speak the truth, it will offend people. But you should not temper your speech based on people's sensibilities. It is absolutely true that you should not go out of your way to offend people. That should not be your objective. But if you tell the truth, sometimes you're just going to offend people. But you should keep on telling the truth no matter what. You may give me an example of that. In the Gospel of John, chapter 8, listen to the words of Jesus, beginning at verse 12. Then Jesus again spoke to them, saying, I am the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in the darkness, but will have the light of life. Now note that declaration that Jesus made, I am the light of the world. And by the way, he goes on to prove in the next chapter that he is the light of the world by giving a man born blind his sight. See, that man was in darkness and Jesus gave him light. But let's note now, when Jesus makes this declaration, how certain people respond to him. So the Pharisees said to him, you are testifying about yourself. Your testimony is not true. So what do they say to Jesus? Because you are talking about yourself and claiming this thing about being the light of the world, it can't be true. So therefore, you're an imposter. You are not the Messiah that some claim that you are. You are no more than an imposter. So what they did was to take their standards and try to impose them on Jesus and say, look, you're going to conform to what we want you to conform to. But no, Jesus answered to them. In verse 14, Jesus answered and said to them, even if I testify about myself, my testimony is true. For I know where I came from and where I am going, but you do not know where I come from or where I am going. Now, you know what Jesus says? You are trying to impose your human standards on me, but there is something that you don't recognize. You don't know who I am. That's the point that Jesus is making. You don't know who I am. In fact, in verse 15, he says, you judge according to the flesh. I am not judging anyone. So when Jesus says you judge according to the flesh, he says you have human standards that you go by in order to judge. But you cannot impose those standards on me. And he's going to give you the reason why in verse 16. But even if I do judge, my judgment is true, for I am not alone in it, but I and the Father who sent me. Jesus says, I have also someone to confirm my testimony. And that is the God of the universe, God the Father. So it is both God and I who testify. Now, note, what did they base their argument on? The Torah. Because in verse 17, it says, even in your law, it has been written that the testimony of two men is true. And what's so outstanding about the statement is that Jesus doesn't say, even in the law, nor does he say, even in our law. Note what he says, even in your law, right? Now, what that means is that don't apply it to me. You have to go by it, but don't apply it to me. Now, it says in the Torah, the testimony of two is what you need to confirm something that's true. Now, Jesus said, well, I meet those requirements. Now, how does he meet them? Because in verse 18, he says, I am he who testifies about myself. That's one witness. And the Father who sent me testifies about me. That's two witnesses. But Jesus says, they're the two witnesses. Now, of course, they argue if a person testifies about himself, it can't be true. And in most cases, that is the truth. You know, you ever meet a person who just talks about himself all the time? I mean, his universe is very small. The only person that he's concerned with or she's concerned with is how it affects them, because they are the only ones who they exist as far as they're concerned. Nobody else is important, just what impacts on me. See, and I'm sure you've met people like that. All right. So of course, and he never say anything negative about themselves. They only say positive things about themselves. And I know you know people like that. Well, this is what Jesus lets us know. I'm not a human being. I'm not like the rest people. So therefore, when I testify about myself, it is not that I'm being braggadocious. It is because I am the truth. That's the reason why I can testify. And I have God the Father who testifies about me. So this is what they respond to. This is how they respond to Jesus in verse 19. So they were saying to him, where is your Father? Now, in other words, furnish your witness. Bring him out. Show us who your witness is. We want to see him. And this is how Jesus answers them in verse 19. So they were saying to him, where is your Father? Jesus answered, you know neither me nor my Father. If you knew me, you would know my Father also. You know, Jesus says to them, in spite of the fact that you claim to be religious, in spite of the fact that you claim to observe the Torah, the law, I want you to know something. You do not know the God of the Torah. You do not know the God who is the creator of all things. And what's the evidence that Jesus furnishes for that allegation? This, because Jesus says, you do not know me. See, because if you knew me, then you would know the Father. Now, this is an absolute claim of deity on the part of Jesus. Do you think that they liked these words that Jesus said? Of course not. They were politically incorrect, no doubt about that. They didn't like what Jesus had to say. But Jesus kept on teaching about himself. Now, I got news for you. What's the choice that we have in this world? We can accept the testimony of others, or we can accept the testimony of Jesus. There have been a lot of men and women who have made claims about themselves, claims that they are divine. But the guy Sun Young Moon from Korea made the claim that he's Christ. He said there was a Jesus, but the first Jesus came and messed it all up, so he had to come and straighten it out. Well, where's Sun Moon, Young Moon today? Well, he's dead. Okay, that's where he is. Elijah Muhammad came along and said that he was the last and final prophet of Allah. But where is Elijah Muhammad today? Well, he's dead. Okay, we can look at Muhammad, who lived 600 years after Jesus. He came as the prophet of Allah. But what happened to him? Well, he died. And that is true with every last one of these religious leaders. You know, there was a guy by the name of Clarence X. He was founder of the Five Percenters. Now, some of you may not be familiar with the Five Percenters, but they were an offshoot from the Nation of Islam, and they considered themselves God. In fact, this is how they greeted themselves. They greeted one another, if you were a man, peace be unto you, God. I mean, that's how they addressed themselves. They addressed themselves as God. I heard one 5% get into an argument with his landlady, and apparently he felt disrespected, and he told the landlady, don't you know I'm God? So the landlady said to him, well, God pay your rent. Okay, so apparently he was God, but he couldn't pay the rent. Well, Clarence X started this movement, and he claimed that he was God. But somebody proved that he wasn't God because they shot him and he died. And never to get up again. Difference between all of these men who make these claims is that they die and that's the end of them. But Jesus got up from the grave 3 days later and showed himself to witnesses, has ascended into heaven, and that is where he's seated right now at the right hand of God. He is not an imposter. Jesus is the real deal. So this is another reflection on the scripture. Thank you for listening.